This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Online short-term rental services are an increasingly popular alternative to hotels. It's estimated that there are at least 2,000 STR properties in San Antonio operating through companies like Airbnb and HomeAway. City Hall is considering a new ordinance that would regulate the STRs and settle some issues between neighborhood organizations, the traditional hospitality industry, and the host, San Antonio residents who put their homes up for rent. How does the city's hotel occupancy tax factor into the issue of short-term rentals? Where is the balance between an innovative economy, property rights, and public safety? We invite you into our conversation. We want you to call in. The number is 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet at us at @tprsource. Have you used these Airbnb or HomeAway? What was your experience like? Or have concerns about them moving into your neighborhood? Call in 210-614-8980. We're joined this afternoon by Mike Shannon, the Director of Development Services for the City of San Antonio. Michael Guarino, he is the Executive Director of the King William Association. Christopher Nolte is the Head of Public Affairs for Airbnb Americas. And Charlotte Gergensen, she is a San Antonio Airbnb host. Welcome to The Source, all of you. It's great to have you here today.
Thank you.
So Christopher Nolte over at the Airbnb, so if you ran into somebody and they had never heard of Airbnb before, how would you explain how this works?
Sure, and thank you so much for having us on the show this morning. The idea behind Airbnb is that anybody, anywhere can take their property and open it up to strangers from around the world. We started about 10 years ago and today have 4.5 million listings in 192 countries and 68,000 cities around the world. On New Year's Eve, about 3 million people stayed in an Airbnb somewhere around the world. And so for travelers, this means being able to stay in a neighborhood outside of the downtown hotel district to experience parts of the city that they may have not otherwise been able to experience. And for hosts, this means the ability to, take what is typically their biggest expense, their home, and turn it into an economic asset, an economic opportunity. In the US, about 80% of our hosts are sharing their primary residence, and they're doing so a couple days each month, and they're using that money to pay the bills, to save for retirement, to take a vacation of their own, to invest in their own homes. And on an annual basis, this is creating billions of dollars of additional revenue for everyday people that they would have not otherwise seen.
People can stay in places that they don't normally get to. I know that some of them have their castles that are on there. Are you in a castle right now? It seems kind of echoey.
I wish I was in a castle. Unfortunately, I'm not in a castle. I'm actually staying with some folks in Los Angeles today. But, there are yurts, there are tree houses. I think the 10-year-old me would have enjoyed Airbnb even more than the 30-something-year-old me because of all the imagination and amazing places that we have all over the world. I stayed in a treehouse a couple of weeks ago.
A treehouse?
In Arizona. That was pretty amazing. Yes, a treehouse. Can you imagine that? I mean, I felt like a 12-year-old with the giddiness that I had walking into this treehouse and thinking about all the adventures that I was about to have.
All right, so Mike Shannon, Director of Development Services for the City of San Antonio. What are the concerns? Why does the City Hall say we've got to step in here?
Sure, and again, thanks for having me on. Well, there's a variety of concerns that City Council had asked us to take a look at. About a year ago, former Councilman Gallagher asked us to really start the dialogue with both neighborhoods and short-term rental host to determine, what's going on. There's a lot of these out there. There's some concerns from neighborhoods that maybe there's too many in a neighborhood, or maybe this is commercializing their neighborhoods. And also some safety issues, with these. So we wanted to take a look at and really take a look at developing, what an ordinance could look like here in the city. We convened a task force of about 24 people, and it was neighborhood leaders, it was short-term rental hosts, some of the industries as well, and we just started that dialogue. And the goal was to come up with a balanced approach as to, we don't want to get too deep into regulating this business or industry because of so many positives, but at the same time, how do we protect the quality and character of neighborhoods? So it's been about a year's worth of discussion so far, a lot of meetings, a lot of passionate discussions and debate. But we think we have a draft ordinance that's something that, that the City Council can look at and think about adopting.
Michael Guarino, Executive Director of the King William Association, y'all have raised concerns, have had a voice in drafting these proposed ordinances. What are your concerns?
Well, first of all, let's make sure we understand the distinction between the two types that are in the draft ordinance here in San Antonio. We have the type one, which is an owner-occupied, and there are a number of them in the neighborhood, but the concern, particular concern we have here are the type twos, which are absentee owners. The fear about an absentee owner running basically a hotel in a residential area is that it can be a nuisance issue, especially if it becomes a party house, and this kind of thing has happened quite a lot in New Orleans and other cities. Some other cities are out ahead of us looking at this. Austin has a pretty tough set of regulations for this, and they've just gone back and taken a second look at how that's governed. Some of it's life safety issues, too. If they're being inspected like a hotel is or like a bed and breakfast is, that's one thing. But, whether or not they're kind of up to code and they're reliable places for people to stay should certainly be an issue. In our case, you have to consider where we are, and Lavaca has the same experience, which is being in a downtown area that's close, accessible to Hemisphere and the Convention Center, most of the kind of visitor attractions that are in the center city. There's a lot of pressure here on people trying to open these things up. The question is, when you have a type 2 that becomes basically a hotel, what does that do to the character of the neighborhood and, the residential nature of it and the sort of contribution that neighbors make to each other by being on the premises?
Charlotte, you're a San Antonio Airbnb host, and so I guess are you type 1 or type 2?
Type 1. We have a studio on our property, and it's separate from our house.
Okay, and so and how does that work for you?
Well, it's been a really positive experience for us. One, the quality of people, the countries that they're coming from, the experience of interacting with them has been really exciting. We actually had a couple come from China to go to a Spurs game. So we're excited about that, the quality that we have. We, if we choose to, could be full every night. And that's what's nice about it is that we can choose. We're going to be out of town or doing something we just blocked that day. And for us, we had a family crisis a couple of years ago, and it was it sustained our lifestyle. My husband was ill for about six months, not to be dramatic, but that was what happened. And I think stories like that are common. We've got single parents who can stay home, who can send their kids to school, including university, without having to get student loans. So there are those negative experiences of party houses, and I empathize completely. You know, housing's on my mind all the time. I'm a real estate broker, and so I'm very clear about what the dangers are. But I believe regulation can help with that.
All right, we'll talk more about that. I want to tap into your knowledge as a real estate broker as well, because property values is another issue when it comes to Airbnb. A lot of speculators, investors out there seeing this as a way that they can, make money, which is good, but we got to do this in a way that we're not hollowing out our neighborhoods. We're going to look at some of the numbers on that as well. Other issues, we hear from callers and emails when the source continues. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Source continues after this break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. On any given night, 2 million people stay in homes on Airbnb in 65,000 cities all over the world. There are more than 4 million listings in 191 countries to choose from. That's more than the top 5 hotel chains combined. Many people are coming to San Antonio because they want to enjoy the feel, the flavor of San Antonio. And they say they get that more from staying in a Airbnb, a home, than going to a hotel. But what does that mean for the neighborhoods and people who are investing in these? What does that mean for neighborhoods? 210-614-8980 for you to join our conversation. And we got a voicemail here. Let's go.
I think the regulations, they're redundant because there's already regulations that are imposed by homeowners associations. It's just like what happened with Uber.
All right, so Mike Shannon is with us, Director of Development Services for the City of San Antonio. Is this a redundant ordinance?
No, I don't think so. And that was a good point made by the caller there, that some neighborhoods have a homeowner association with some deed restrictions that they're all allowed supposed to follow. But not everywhere in the city is subject to any type of HOA regulations. So there's a large portion of our city and neighborhoods that really rely on city regulations that would help dictate what can and can't be done and define things like a public nuisance and your right to operate a short-term rental. So that's what this ordinance does capture. HOAs have specific rules and can be even more strict, but there's a large piece of the city that doesn't have any of that protection.
Are HOAs saying no STRs in our neighborhood?
Well, we haven't looked at all the HOA rules, of course, out there. They're all specific to that neighborhood, but there's some that don't allow them and others that do. So that would be up to each individual HOA.
All right, here's another caller, and this is from our Julia. And Julia, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi there. How are you?
Doing good.
I am. I have a what's called a type 2, although I've been told it's a 1.5. I live right across the street. I improved property that was really derelict, burnt down, and I purchased it and rebuilt one small cottage. One of the successes I've had that I want to highlight is a couple that was military that came here to stay while they searched for a house. They were going to buy out of town, and they wound up buying in this neighborhood of Government Hill because they liked it so much just by staying here. So I think there are benefits to this that aren't necessarily obvious. And while I, too, understand that there are issues, I believe those issues are neighborhood by neighborhood and block by block.
All right, Julia, thank you for that. So Michael Guarino, Executive Director of the King William Association, I mean, you're bringing people into the King William neighborhood, staying there, and they're getting a feel for what y'all have developed there, you know, this magnificent residential neighborhood. I mean, isn't that a plus?
Well, you know, remember that we do have type 1s here and that our official position is not opposed to them. We're just interested in seeing what the city's going to do in terms of regulation of them. But there's another consideration, which is that even for the type 1s, which typically in our neighborhood tend to be carriage houses and dependencies that are behind the larger houses, those have been housing up until now, and particularly they've been good housing for graduate students and people who work downtown, young professionals and so forth. So when someone makes a decision to turn that into a short-term rental, it displaces someone who could be there as a long-term rental, and so it's pressure on the housing stock, which is an issue.
So you see this as something that's adding to the housing crunch that we have now, not yet a housing crisis, but we're taking away affordable housing and turning it into, you know, this revenue stream for individuals.
Well, that's right. I mean, nobody could object to anyone's use of their private property, but there are other consequences for the city as a whole. I mean, for example, in the center city of New Orleans now, it's a city I know very well. That's where my family came from. Rents are escalating by about 50% because of the pressure from both type 1s and type 2s.
So what do we know about how much traffic we're getting in San Antonio? So Mike Shannon with the City of San Antonio, what's the percentage? Are we taking business away from hotels and motels?
Well, I think that's a hard question to answer. And one of the benefits of having an ordinance where short-term rentals will have to register is, you know, we just don't know where all of these are. There's estimates anywhere from the low hundreds to what you described, a couple of thousand in the city. So before we're able to capture any measurable results on what it's doing to housing stock or the other industries out there, lodging industries, I think it's important for us to have an ordinance that says, hey, if you're a short-term rental, whether it's a type 1 or type 2, we don't have a type 1.5 in the ordinance yet, but that'll be interesting. But come in, register, and then we would track that data to see, you know, what effects it has on the housing and tourism industry.
So you're asking people to register.
Sure.
Is there a penalty for not registering?
Yeah. So if we would to pass the ordinance that required them to register, they would have a little bit of time to register after that. And if they didn't, then they would be in violation of the ordinance. Penalties range from $200 to $500 per instance. So you know, it could be detrimental to not come in and register.
All right. So Christopher Nolte, head of the public affairs for Airbnb Americas, I'm sure we've touched on a few things that you want to weigh in on.
Yeah, definitely. So I think there's a couple things here. And one, really appreciate that the city is taking such a thoughtful approach to this. What we have seen in our experience has been sort of across the country is that the neighborhood makeup of every city, the housing stock of every city is really different. And so there's not a uniform approach. And so really appreciate the work that's being done on this front. I think secondly, you know, the conversation around type twos is an important conversation. The most important conversation for us is the conversation around type ones, because that is, you know, people's primary residences. That is the majority of our business in San Antonio, and that is, you know, what we think is most important. But certainly want to make sure that, you know, any conversation around type twos is not being driven by one or two anecdotes. You know, I heard, you know, mention of rent increases in New Orleans. I think that if you were to look at New Orleans and read what some housing economists have had to say about New Orleans, the housing challenges there come from a whole number of different factors, and certainly want to make sure that we're having the right conversation here about what's happening and the impact of short-term rentals. And what we do know is that it's expanding the tourism pie. It's making it possible for more people to visit cities, which fundamentally is good for the tax base, is good for businesses, and now is good for homeowners who are able to open up their homes. And we're really happy to see that.
I know, like in San Antonio, we have events like the Final Four. All the hotel rooms are booked up and people are looking for places to stay. So, I mean, that's something to consider. I mean, so Charlotte, Airbnb host, are you booked up for a Final Four and all these things?
I am. Quite early last year, yeah.
So people really want to take find every available room that there is in town and have a great experience. So when you look at the San Antonio tourism industry, are you looking at that, Mike Shannon?
Yes, absolutely. We invited some tourism officials to our task force meetings. We're actually looking with our finance department and the hot tax and making sure we're collecting those type of things and really tracking the data of the short-term rentals. Because, again, it's really expanded so much over the last several years. It's something that we really want to understand through the registration process. We want to put appropriate balanced regulations to ensure the safety and quality within our neighborhoods and also for those that are coming in and renting. And then lastly, just to touch on the point, the proposed ordinance, which I think is key, is by ensuring that those short-term rentals register with us. It's those bad actors, those party houses, or those public nuisances. This ordinance will have a way for us to revoke that registration, and which really is to say, look, if you can't be compatible within the neighborhood, whether you're type 1 or type 2, there's some consequences. So a lot of the short-term rental hosts that were part of the task force really liked that, because they don't like the fact, is what they said, is they don't like the fact that, you know, there are those party houses, those bad actor type of owners or operators that give their industry a bad name. And so I think that's the balance we're really looking for. And we're hoping to, you know, be forward with that ordinance soon.
So as a person's able to list their homes on these websites and not be registered, and maybe they're hoping that you won't see that, or can, or do the websites insist that they register and they're going to look to the city to find out who they can list?
It'll be more of the former, meaning...
it'll be catch me if you can.
Yeah, and we have an enforcement strategy in place when the ordinance goes into effect, working with not only our code enforcement folks, San Antonio Police Department, neighborhood leadership, those type of things, as well as our finance department in terms of, you know, taxes and those type of things.
Right, so the city can go online just as well as anyone else and
absolutely.
See who's registered and do a cross-reference. Okay, yeah. Here's Daniel. Daniel's called in. Daniel, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. So my girlfriend actually rents out her back house through Airbnb, and she was able to take her garage and refurbish it and then into a back house, and then she's taking the money that she makes through Airbnb to pay off the money that she invested. And so it's a way for her to invest in her property and increase her property value through Airbnb, but also at the same time, when she told her insurance company that she was renting out through Airbnb, her insurance was dropped. And this is another issue that I think other people through Airbnb have had. And I think that, you know, a city ordinance is just causing these people that are renting out through Airbnb to have an extra headache. And it's something that...
The city ordinance is causing the headache? Is that...
Or it would be an extra headache for these okay. people that are having to already deal with things that they're because of what they're renting out through Airbnb.
That's interesting. Thanks for calling in with that point. So, Charlotte, let me ask you about the insurance issue.
Sure.
You're a host for Airbnb. Did you have that?
I was not dropped by my company, but I was advised by people at Airbnb to do some research on what companies do insure, and it actually is insured under vacation rental. So it's a different package from homeowners within the insurance company. It was not difficult for us to get. Our home is 70 years old. The price was not that much higher, and it's certainly covered by the Airbnb rent. So, addressing just the insurance.
Why would an insurance company want to drop you if you're using Airbnb?
I think there's a higher liability when you have guests on your property every day, slips and falls, theft, that sort of thing. And they have all of their actuarial departments that analyze that. However, that's my assumption.
Okay. So, and Chris Nolte with Airbnb?
Sure. So I think there's a couple things here. The first of which is, you know, we offer every host $1 million worth of liability insurance for every one of their stays, because this is certainly an issue that we think about and want to make sure that both our hosts and guests are taken care of and are protected. We also have $1 million host guarantee program to cover any damages or any issues that come up during a stay. These are both used pretty rarely, but we think it's important to have in place. And we've also worked with a number of insurers to help them understand what home sharing is and how it works so that they can, you know, either modify their current products or offer new products to ensure that, you know, hosts are covered properly. You know, we certainly want to make sure that both hosts and guests are protected. We've definitely seen many cities that have said, look, we think that there needs to be liability insurance. We think that there needs to be some sort of host protection. Generally, the minimums that we've seen in those cases have been far below what we already offer our hosts. And that's something that we pay for as part of listing on Airbnb.
And so, Mike Shannon, is insurance part of what you're looking at?
Yes, absolutely. And that was discussed through the task force. It was one of those items that really a good general consensus that everybody felt that the minimum registration requirement should include some basic insurance requirements at those levels described.
Okay. And so let me, and Mike Guarino with the King William Association, did you think about insurance? Is that an issue that y'all are concerned about?
I think so, and but to offer something to those who are doing these operations, if there's a city ordinance, I think that probably underwriters would take a favorable look at that if it has something to do with making minimum standards of life safety and other kinds of protections, because that gives them a guarantee that they could look at.
Right.
I think that wasn't really a consideration of ours. I guess our bigger consideration is density, and would this be like the existing bed and breakfast ordinance, which specifies how close these places can be to each other?
Okay, we'll talk more about the density issue. We know that a lot of these Airbnb places are being stacked into certain neighborhoods, and so what do these neighborhoods think about that? Also, we'll talk about other issues regarding Airbnb and HomeAway and what this means for San Antonio's hospitality industry. If you've got a question or a comment, give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. If you've used this service when you've traveled, let's hear your story. It would be great to hear that. The Source continues after this. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about short-term rentals. This is a non-traditional form of hospitality industry here in San Antonio, and it's really popular. More and more people are turning to Airbnb and HomeAway websites to find places to rent while they vacation here in San Antonio. Homeowners are using this as well, and investors are looking to it. What does this mean for San Antonio and the hotel motel occupancy tax and our, you know, industry? Tourism is a big industry for San Antonio, but without the hotel motel tax, how is it going to fund our convention center development, city promotion, and local arts and culture? Call in. The number is 210-614-8980. This is a caller that we got on our voicemail line. This is Joyce.
My name is Joyce. I live in San Antonio, but I'm currently at an Airbnb in Merida, Mexico, and we just returned from a week in Cuba. In fact, some of the places are available on Airbnb. And it's wonderful staying with the families, meeting the families, talking to them. And it's what we enjoy when we host people in our home in San Antonio. And we've met people from all over the world. The lady we're staying with in Merida was originally, we met her when she was a guest in our home in San Antonio on our Airbnb room. And so we really believe in it. I can't stress enough, though, that the city, if they want to regulate anything, they need to control the ones that are not owner-occupied. There is all the difference in the world in inviting a guest into your home to stay with you where you are there to take care of their needs, answer their questions, whatever comes up. I just don't even feel that those places are, they're not what Airbnb originally was, and I feel like Airbnb has lost its way by letting so many of these non-owner-occupied places proliferate. And I can fully understand how the city would want to regulate those. But they are throwing the ones of us who invite people into our own homes, they're throwing us in with business people who buy a property just to rent it out, where it is entirely, entirely different concept. It really is.
Okay, Christopher Nolte, head of public affairs for Airbnb Americas. Can you react to Joyce's comments?
Sure. So, you know, one, it's always wonderful to hear from someone who's staying in an Airbnb. And certainly if you've not been to Cuba yet and, you know, have the opportunity, staying in an Airbnb is the best way to do it. You know, we have seen a number of cities approach the differentiation between type one and type two, you know, primary residences and a secondary home differently. We certainly think that it makes sense to regulate someone sharing their primary residence differently than someone renting out their second home. And, you know, think that there are a number of ways to do this. We think that it's possible to do it through higher licensing fees. We think it's possible to do it through, you know, a more stringent registration process by, you know, asking those hosts to provide additional data with the city. But what we also know is that there are lots of people in San Antonio and plenty of other cities that have second homes for all sorts of good reasons. People who have homes, they only want to rent out part of the year because they live in them the other part of the year. And so we do think that there's a place for these, and we do think that it is feasible and possible to regulate them in a way that balances between, you know, allowing someone to share their primary residence, but allowing someone to share their secondary residence, and to ensure that there are safety mechanisms in place, that there are quality of life mechanisms in place to protect against party houses and any sort of disruption to a neighborhood.
Okay. Mike Shannon, the Director of Development for City of San Antonio. I mean, Airbnb, we hear they're everywhere. So San Antonio doesn't have to be the first person to crack this nut. The other cities have taken this on. So what have we learned from what to do and not to do in that area?
Sure. And that was definitely part of our research over the last year, is really to look at the cities, not only across the nation, states, but really worldwide, and some of the regulations that have been attempted that are in place now.
In order to achieve a desirable result, sure. Not to shut it down, but to sort of
give
a little guide.
Yeah, of course. I think the main thing we found out was there really isn't a model ordinance out there. They're very local, very specific to that area or that jurisdiction, municipality. You know, we were looking for, you know, something that maybe might be easy to adopt because everybody else is doing it the right way. But really, there's a lot of different ways you can do it. Some are very heavy with regulation. Some are very maybe minimal with regulation. And it's ever-changing as well. So it wasn't as easy for us to just copy someone else. But we've taken some good points from some of those, like the differentiation between the type 1 and type 2, owner-occupied versus non-owner-occupied. That seems to be one of the items that's fairly standard out there. But, you know, we really worked hard over the past year with, you know, over 16 meetings with task force members at 2 or 3 hours a pop to try to come up with what we have now, which is a kind of a draft ordinance that is somewhere in the middle, a good balanced ordinance.
And Charlotte, you wanted to join that?
Yes, I was a member of the task force, and it was equally weighted with industry, hosts, and neighborhood associations, some for, some against type 2. We put together clear common sense rules that are going to regulate this new economy, and I think that the city should be given a chance to regulate based on that, based on the consensus of a representative democracy, rather than jumping into the extreme. And, you know, my experience is certainly not the world's, but I have clients in my industry who buy rental properties to rent long-term. Not every single vacant property is purchased for short-term rental.
Okay, here's a lot of callers here. Here's Chuck. Chuck, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking the call. I've got several properties that I use to sponsor visiting military students, and they're usually here for anything from, say, 90 days to 2 years. I mean, what's the cutoff for a short-term rental?
Great question. And so, Mike, you want to add to that? Is there a cutoff?
Yeah, so a short-term rental will be anything 30 days or less, and that's the key definition in the ordinance. Right now, all of our existing rules and regulations in the city's development code, none of them actually specify a time frame. They use words like temporary or others, and is temporary a weekend? Is it a week? Is it 90 days versus 2 years? But 30 days and under would be considered a short-term rental.
Okay, here's Carlos, and Carlos is called in. Hey, Carlos, you're on the air.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay.
Thank you for taking my call.
Go ahead.
I've been doing this for 6.5 years. I have one vacation home, short-term rental, type 2, that's owner unoccupied, and I'm an agent for 8 other short-term rentals. There have been a lot of anecdotal comments regarding the existence of short-term rentals in our neighborhood communities. The biggest ones, of course, that come in are parties, noise, parking, and unfamiliar neighbors. These problems, they exist in our neighbors. I mean, there's tens to thousands of calls every year in our normal neighborhoods with our neighbors, whether they're hosting pay-per-view fights, football games, celebrations of any sort, and they're lining cars up and down the street. In this 6.5 years, I've had more of my own tenants call that were staying here for, whether it was military graduation, a funeral, or it was to enjoy SeaWorld and Six Flags. I've had more calls from them stating that the neighbors are too loud, they're partying, or the neighbors' dogs are barking. More have been on that side. As a matter of fact, I haven't had any incidents where my neighbors have called me about my guests. I do maintain a good communication with all my neighbors. In every home, a neighbor has my contact information to call me if they need to. And even if something did go wrong, we have in our city the services and the authorities to report and address these issues. As far as safety and property values, which were some of the initial things that were requested by Gallagher, Michael Dice, which is Mike Shannon's counterpart in the Development Services Department, he did the research, and in finding out that property values have been protected or even slightly increased, and no measurable difference has been discovered in the safety of our neighborhoods. The end of the day, we care about our homes. We do not allow parties or events to take place in our home. And an earlier caller mentioned that if someone's living in the home, such if I'm living in the home like a type one, that I'm there to address the concerns. My phone number is given to every guest. They call me for whatever they need. As a matter of fact, after they've checked in and I've verified that they made it in safely, I always remind them and I check up on them during their stay.
Okay. Carlos, thank you for that. There's a lot there. So let me go to Michael Guarino. He is the director of King William Association. So what about what Carlos has brought up? I mean, sometimes the guests complain about the neighbors.
Well, you have an obnoxious neighbor who has a noisy Super Bowl party. That's once a year. It's not 365 days a year. The concern I think that our neighbors have isn't whether someone who's responsible running a type 1 or type 2 is doing a good job. The problem is, what do you do about a bad actor? And, you know, that's why we're looking forward to seeing what the city is going to be doing with the development of the ordinance. We already have a regulation, which, of course, is the bed and breakfast ordinance. And let's remember that there are a number of bed and breakfasts that have been established in King William since the 1990s when that was written. And we do have a number of type ones here.
So we need a cop on the beat, and that would be somebody like the city that would take away someone's registration if they were a bad actor. And so my question to Christopher Nolte at Airbnb Americas, will you pay attention to when a city takes away a host registration, saying, okay, maybe we should take this person off our website?
Yeah, so this is something we thought a lot about and developed a number of tools around. And at the end of the day, we think that the first line of enforcement, you know, as we're talking about here, belongs to the city. We are one player in a space with many, many other players that exist and who, you know, operate short-term rentals via realtors, via, you know, the web, and want to be a constructive player. And so we have developed a neighborhood tool that allows people to report problematic listings to us. And so we, you know,
right. So let me get make a quick reaction from Charlotte. So do you look at guest ratings if someone?
Absolutely, every time.
And do you turn them down sometimes?
Well, actually, I had Airbnb turn someone down. They, for whatever reason, they said that she wasn't qualified, and I didn't have anything to do with it. She was just coming for one night. So, and I think what we're looking at is some consideration around what are the regulations. I think people in our city need to be educated about regulations, hence going to B session is really good. We can all get educated.
Okay, so we'll talk more about what happens in B session with the city council on this regulation coming up. Phone lines still open, got a couple lines open, 210-614-8980. The Source continues after this 1 minute break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about short-term rentals, STR. This is people who go on Airbnb or HomeAway, and they will rent homes for vacations or other purposes. If you've got a question or a comment, the number is 210-614-8980. We've been talking about the hot tax, the hotel motel occupancy tax. Critical part of a city, running the city, they use that money to pay for promotion of the city, the development of the convention center, for arts and culture in the city. So how does that work with Airbnb? Christopher Nolte, you're the public affairs guy for Airbnb.
Yeah, so we actually have an agreement with the state of Texas to collect and remit hotel taxes, which we established last year. We have agreements with about 350 jurisdictions globally, and certainly open to considering one and pursuing one with the city of San Antonio. That would be pretty consistent with what we've done with, you know, dozens and dozens of other cities. We've also worked with cities to, you know, make sure that, you know, to work with them on how that tax revenue is used. In some places, it's used to promote the destination. In other places, it's used to support homelessness programs. And so really open to that conversation and look forward to working with the city on that front.
Mike Shannon, Director of Development Services for the city of San Antonio. Are you getting hotel motel funds right now from Airbnb and HomeAway and other organizations?
Well, not necessarily from Airbnb and HomeAway, but from a number of short-term rental operators right now. I think it's important to note that the hotel occupancy tax, both state and local versions, those laws already exist. So one of the questions that we've delved into over the last year was, you know, verifying that that was the case and educating all short-term rental operators that they are supposed to be paying that tax. We believe that clearly not everybody is, and that's not only unfortunate for the city in terms of collecting that tax revenue, but for the short-term operators expressed a, you know, not a level playing field, if you will. Some were not paying the tax, therefore could offer cheaper rates. So part of the registration ordinance is clearly to verify through that registration that they are paying the appropriate hotel occupancy tax. And then our finance department with the city will look to work with Airbnb and any other agencies out there to make it as easy as possible for operators to remit those taxes to us. So we're looking forward to working with Airbnb or any of the other hosts or any short-term rental operators to find ways to make it as easy as possible to submit that.
Charlotte, are you paying hot tax?
I do, yes.
Do you pay directly to the city?
I do.
And what rate is that?
It's 10.75.
And is that what I would be paying if I went to Motel 6 or something, the same thing?
Correct. The hotel occupancy tax rate is the same.
It's same, no, regardless. Okay, yeah. We got an email from San Antonio Neighborhoods for Everyone saying our organization is proposing a lesser tax for Tier 1 short-term rentals than for Tier 2. With economies of scale, hotels can maintain a 10.75% tax. However, for someone renting an extra room in their home, a 10.75% tax is burdensome. So is that something, I mean, first you got to wonder about the fairness to the actual legacy hotel industry that we have here in San Antonio. Should everyone be paying the same thing, or how do we you know, square that?
Well, I think right now, the last year or so, when we were talking about the hot tax, it was, is everybody required to pay it? And I think, you know, when we pass an ordinance, so if this one were to be passed soon, these ordinances evolve over time as well. So that would be something for us to look at. Right now, the proposed ordinance keeps the same hotel occupancy tax rate for everyone. But if, you know, that's something we wanted to look forward in the future and creating a different level of tax, that's something the city could look at both locally and then at the state level.
But right now it's estimated that the city is missing out on a lot of money because it's not collecting this tax at all, right?
we believe there's a lot of short-term operators out there that are not paying the tax.
That's and if correct. We pass this ordinance, there'll be a way to recapture that money that's being lost.
It'll give us a better enforcement tool to do so, yes.
Okay. A lot of people are wondering, getting some comments on Twitter, and I haven't got this on, about the density requirements. And so we know that in Dignity Hill and in the King William areas and in other parts of the San Antonio and in surrounding municipalities that there's a lot of people going into these legacy neighborhoods, ones with the big Victorian houses and are really, you know, done up nice. People want to have that great experience. So what is the question about density? And we had a density requirement on the Airbnb, on the old traditional bed and breakfast stuff. So what about here?
Sure. So that was a large part of the discussion of the task force for quite a bit of the meetings. And the real question is, if we were to allow type 1 and or type 2 into neighborhoods, continue to allow them, really, how many is too many? How many really they start taking over the neighborhood? So the density regulations that are proposed in the draft ordinance really set some standards of, you know, for every property that you have a short-term rental type 2, there's a distance criteria of, you know, I have to go 300 feet down the road or 150 feet across the street to get to another one so that they're not really close to each other and taking over really the whole block or the whole neighborhood. So that's one way that's proposed to do it. You can do it with percentage-based regulation or others, but really that's a way to provide some of that balance, again, like we talked about, to ensure that there's not, you know, all over the neighborhood.
So Loretta, a caller, has a question or a comment about that. Loretta, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. I live in Lavaca and in an area where we have an extremely high density of type 2, HomeAways, Airbnbs, and this summer we tried to get signatures to start a pilot parking program, and it was very difficult to get any because we don't have a lot of residents here. People are in and out, and these homes are all going to be grandfathered because they've been here for a very long time. Also, I know people who do rent some of these Airbnbs or HomeAways, and there are no fire extinguishers. There are no safety measures in these places.
Okay,
last point.
Just go ahead real quick.
People are starting to circumvent the HomeAway and Airbnb by going to people who come here once a year for a month or two directly.
All right. Okay. So, Loretta, thank you. And so let's go back to Christopher Nolte, Airbnb America. So what about the fire extinguisher? Also, I'm wondering about ADA, Americans with Disabilities.
Sure. So a couple things I would say. First, you know, we've worked with many cities on, you know, educating hosts and making sure that hosts are following local safety regulations. Certainly, you know, that is something that we take really seriously. Every city has a different approach to this and obviously has different rules. And so, you know, we can look across the country at different cities have taken different approaches, and certainly we'll respect and work with San Antonio wherever they land on this and what they believe that hosts need to have in their homes. The second piece is on the ADA. We've actually acquired a company earlier this year called Accommable that works only to create short-term rentals for people with disabilities and to make sure that short-term rentals are very clearly labeled and that you understand exactly what will be available and not available to you when you arrive at a home to ensure that people that have disabilities, one, have a place on our platform and two, are able to identify listings that work for their specific needs. This is something that we, you know, take pretty seriously and, you know, have worked pretty hard to identify the right solution to ensure that, you know, it's very obvious on our platform which homes will and will not make sense for anybody, regardless of whether it's a person with disabilities, someone traveling with a family, someone traveling with someone who is elderly and struggles to go upstairs. We want to make sure that people have a really clear understanding of the sort of home that they're arriving at so that they have a great stay. And at the end of the day, we are a vacation company. We are a travel company. We want people to have wonderful, magical times when they go somewhere, and it starts with having a great product that educates people and helps them understand exactly what they can expect to get.
Michael Guarino with the King William Association, are you concerned about the grandfathering of these homes?
Yes, and in fact, that's our position. We don't want to see them grandfathered. We want to see them brought in under whatever the new ordinance will be and that they should conform to it.
Well, how do you do that if you're going to have a house, a neighborhood that's already have a high density and you need a density requirement, who decides who gets to stay and who gets to go?
Well, I think part of that is going to be what the distribution actually turns out to be. And I think, as Mike Shannon said, we're not really sure where they all are. So that may be something that has to be part of a discussion when we see where that is. At the very least, then, you know, Austin has had a moratorium on the applications for new ones because they're wrestling with this as well. And I'm not sure what the outcome of that's going to be up there.
So, Mike Shannon, a moratorium, I mean, seemed like there's a lot of workarounds.
Yeah, and we've been following Austin and a few other cities. But we believe the proposed ordinance that we have will follow state law and existing local law, which says if you're legally in existence at the time that we adopt a new ordinance, well, you know, you're essentially grandfathered until changes happen. The new ordinance that we're proposing has some regulations in there that would allow and require Type 2 operators to get a special exception. That actually sticks with the owner, not the land. So it's really, you know, if the new owner comes in, that would they would have to come through the process again. So we've tried to take some of that and get people into the new regulations as quickly as possible. But there is going to be an element of grandfathering for those that are, again, legally in existence. And one key element, if you weren't paying your hot tax, you weren't legally in existence. So those that weren't legally paying hot tax and those won't be grandfathered. So I think that's a key point as well.
What about, is there going to be amnesty for that? Will people expect it to pay backward on the hot tax that they missed out?
Very much so. They could have to go back, and if it's proven, if we have evidence that says that they've been operating and didn't pay taxes, then our city finance department will be looking for, you know, those back taxes. So those discussions, you know, would be ongoing.
All right. Well, people need to get Jake with the city on those things. I want to thank you, Mike Shannon. He is the Director of Development Services for the City of San Antonio. Michael Guarino is the Executive Director of the King William Association. Christopher Nulty, the Head of Public Affairs for Airbnb Americas. Thank you, Chris, for joining us. And Charlotte Jorgensen, she is the San Antonio Airbnb host, and it's great to have you here with Give Us a Perspective. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.